Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it is fantastic to have your company today for episode 324. This week on the show, we get introspective again as we look at 80s cartoons. I think that's pretty much it. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Ben.
G'day, g'day.
Frank.
Hello, hello.
Scotty.
Hello there.
And Davey's back. Yeah.
By popular demand of everyone on the Discord.
Yeah.
You go to the Discord, do you?
Sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes. Whenever Scott does at everyone, and I think someone's talking to me. Yep.
I knew I was forgetting something. We're going to also open a package from Colin Betts.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's always very, very exciting when Colin sends something. It's
not just the contents.
No.
It's the presentation.
Yes.
He gets so right. He puts a lovely note in there, which we'll get to later in the show. It's an amazing effort from the great man.
Amazing. Yes, we'll go through that and do some unboxing. All right, Scotty, over to you.
Oh, as Trent said, we're going to talk all about 80s cartoons, the fundamental cornerstone of any child growing up, the 30-minute advertisement for the toys that you want to so desperately buy or have under the Christmas tree. Yes, we are going to talk about all those wonderful, wonderful things about the 80s cartoons. Now, I asked you guys to list your top three cartoons. So what we might do is start to my left here with Trent.
I can't remember what I listed. If I go back, I know there was some controversy around whether Ninja Turtles is 80s or 90s or what
have
you.
I will add some clarity to that. We're going by what happened here in Australia because we are the center of the entirety universe. The Ninja Turtles cartoon debuted in February of 1990 here in Australia. So it does not
And you
count.
Know what? If Darren was here, he would have known that and he would have said, no, it doesn't count. In the context of what we're talking about.
I can only imagine whatever the runtime of this episode, double it if Darren was here because he would not only be able to tell you how many episodes, he'd tell you what time of day it was on, what channel it was on.
He'd tell you what commercials were on.
No, I was going to say, he could tell you what else was on the VHS that he taped it onto. Yes. He's like, oh, and then after it was, you know, this. Like, yeah.
He'd tell you what aerobics class was being done before the cartoon started.
Cartoon wise, look, I couldn't go past He-Man and the Master of the Universe. And look, to be honest, probably I probably saw a lot more She-Ra as well. Mm. So She-Ra would be up there for me. And to be honest, I probably couldn't really tell the difference between the two at the time. Yep. There were a lot of crossover episodes of She-Ra where He-Man was in there, characters from Master of the Universe were in there. I don't know what I picked for my number three when I... Do you have it in front of you?
You actually chose Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, okay. So that's... Okay.
Disqualified yourself.
I'm trying to think what else. There was a lot of Disney that I watched when I got up. And like, I'm not sure, again, what era it fits into, but... it's probably more 90s.
From the Disney
Goof
side.
Troop.
DuckTales. Rescue Rangers.
Rescue Rangers. That was all kind of prime TV. And then probably some of the other stuff for me was, like, I remember watching Thundercats. I remember watching Robotech and some of those sort of shows. But it's probably a bit more hazy. So I'm gonna lock in He-Man and She-Ra.
Yep, very good.
And then kind of, you know, just my love for those Disney cartoons.
Yep. What about you, Davey?
I wanted to say, because, as you said, Turtles were 1990s essentially here because in Australia... Famously, we got everything like years after it was popular.
A decade later.
But now it's happening again with Turtles.
The golden era for us is basically, well, for myself, is the early 90s where it was just the ghost of the 80s was still haunting Australia pop culture because we're so far behind. So I went with some, like, I steered clear of the likes of, because I know one of you will probably say G1 Transformers. I know that obviously Masters of the Universe, that they're all going to get a run. So I went with more obscure stuff, and bearing in mind I was born in 1985, so I was just a baby, guys. So what I've put on my list, I had Super Ted.
Yes.
It was a classic for me. Fantastic. From the 80s. Alf, the animated version of Alf, was also on my list. Mm-hmm. And Babba was a huge part of my childhood.
Now, was that after school?
It was. Well, I wanted to touch on that in general, so I'll go. We'll let everyone else have wrong answers before we get to that. But yeah,
I'm going to be super generic. I'm so glad I'm following up after Davey's thing. I'm going to go.
You've just written Rainbow Bright three times.
Definitely He-Man, because you know I was obsessed with it. Transformers, I rate that so high. And Voltron, like proper, you know, Lion Force. But I also loved Vehicle Force. Yep. So the two sort of complemented each other, and there was a crossover sort of movie, direct-to-TV type.
You know, I don't remember the cartoon of Vehicle Force at all.
Definitely existed, 100%.
Yep. It's definitely 80s, because that's how much the price of the tank, the skull tank is. It's definitely in the 80s.
So... Yeah, no, 100%. What didn't go as long, but that it was there. Yep.
But in saying that, looking into like a lot of the stuff we're going to look at today, it might have got two seasons. It might have ran for 1 year.
Mm.
They were 50-episode seasons back in the day. Look at Shearer, went for 2 years.
Mm.
But it had like 96 episodes. So it's a different run of...
Yeah.
You look at South Park now, 6 episodes is a season. Like it's a different time.
Yep. Ben, what you were saying about Voltron, it's like Vehicle Force was screened once here in Australia, and then you just got on constant repeat, Lion Force, nonstop, all the time.
Yep.
And anytime you found a Voltron episode, that's what it was.
Yes.
So I can understand, Frank, you sort of thinking it didn't exist.
Yeah, like I knew it, like I had one of the old the rubberized toys that was just, you know, plugged to... Put them all together, but I'd never I knew it existed, but I didn't, don't think I've ever seen the show. Speaking of shows, I'm a little bit combination of what's already been said. Transformers is one that I have that visceral memory of. Mum, I want to leave church as soon as possible because I need to go home and watch Transformers, and I really hope Dad set the VCR correctly, otherwise I'm going to get really pissed off. So that was big for me. He-Man is the other one. It was also that thing where, you know, I would go to relatives' parties or whatever, and people would say, "Oh, that's the He-Man kid." That was me.
Oh, wow.
In terms of how much I watched the show and loved it. And then a bit like you said, Trent, with the Sad Day Disney, DuckTales, like iconic theme song, and just, you know, that image of Scrooge diving into the big pit of money, which seems great as a kid. And you think about it now and you go, That's going to hurt.
Well, Family Guy made that a reality, isn't it? Coins are not liquid.
That's now realistic because it's the people that charge postage from the US to Australia.
Oh, they're
now
they're
doing that
in
their homes.
Yes. We'll talk about postage. No, we won't talk postage a bit later on. Scotty.
So for me, I chose Robotech.
Yep.
That was all three series of Robotech I've probably seen 3 or 4 times. And for me to watch it in the morning before work or before school, yes, I was still watching cartoons before I was going to work. It was just an insanely good experience to have. A great way to start the day. Conversely, at the end of the day, I had Astro Boy.
Yep.
So ABC sort of my bread and butter for after school entertainment, and without fail, 4 o'clock, Astro Boy comes on, and honestly, ABC would have probably played that show on constant rotation for 5 years straight, and I doubt I missed a single episode. Mm. Loved it. And Transformers, because ultimately it is just such a good opening. It's so well animated and just a damn good fun cartoon to watch. I desperately wanted Transformers as a child, but the program was about as close as I actually got to owning them as a kid.
Aww. Do you have any Transformers now?
I have some Masterpiece Transformers at home. I don't have any of the originals.
No G1 at all?
They're all Michael Bay Transformers.
Bay first. Dirty words. No, I don't have any G1 Transformers. Oh, are you making a donation?
That's not what I said at all. Okay, well,
there's two shelves over there.
Yeah.
So, guys, what I want to do now is I touched on the fact that ABC for afternoon entertainment for cartoons was critical for me. I also know that on a Saturday morning, Channel 9 was the mecca for cartoons. There was a solid 6 or 7 hour block of cartoons from 6 in the morning through to 12 in the afternoon before the wide world of sports started.
Yep. Yeah.
But for me, on a Saturday morning, I would wake up early. Like, I've always been an early riser.
Yep.
6:30, bang, I'm up. And I was pretty independent as a kid, much to my parents' delight. So I would get myself up, grab my pillow, grab my quilt, head downstairs, shut the door to the lounge room, turn the telly on so I wouldn't wake anybody else up. I'd make my own brekkie and bang, I was there for 5 hours watching cartoons back to back. And it just did not matter what the program was, how old it was, how shitty, in fact, the animation of it was. It was just such a magical moment for me and that part of the week where I could escape and just be a kid carefree. Yep. It was magic, magic, magic.
And because of your age, it was just 5 hours of Steamboat Mickey. Just
Steamboat Willie.
And those Steamboat Willie, sorry. And those bouncing skeletons with like wavy animation and look, Fleischer Superman.
You could have gone shadow puppets and wall paintings, but I'll take that.
One thing I found super interesting looking into this was the 80s really was a golden age for cartoons, and there's a few factors in play here because Ronald Reagan got in as president.
Yep.
And one of the things he did was repeal certain laws when it came to advertising. Now, all through the 70s, if you were making a cartoon, it couldn't be directed at kids. It had to be family friendly. So that's why that was considered the golden age of Hanna-Barbera.
Yep. Sure.
You've got the Jetsons, you've got the Flintstones, got all these cartoons that were a broad appeal. Of course, kids love them, but it had to be a family show. Whereas when this repeal happens, all of a sudden, you can market to kids.
Yeah.
So we have so much to thank for that change because, you know, that's the existence of G.I. Joes in the smaller scale, which were done because of an oil shortage, which I found out.
Mm-hmm. Was that right?
Yep. Yeah. Because of the rising cost of oil and the shortage, they had to cut back on costs. And the first thing to go was the 12-inch G.I. Joes down to the 3.75. But with that repeal, all of a sudden, cartoons could be aimed at kids. That's why we got so many incredible cartoons aimed directly at our hearts and our parents' wallets by proxy.
Because of America.
Yeah. But I also loved, like, you look at things like Muppet Babies. That was one thing that I had on my list. Jim Henson was pretty adamant that he didn't want to sell toys to kids. He wanted to create a product that was... it was for kids. The entertainment was the product. I'm not trying to sell anything. They're not trying to make money. So if you watch Muppet Babies, the main crux of that show is using your imagination to explore other worlds and do other things. Then you flip the channel and you watch like He-Man. And it's like, guess what? Here's all this backstory. Here's all this deep mythology. Here's all this shit ton of toys for your parents to buy you. So it's so good because we got the best of both worlds. We got all these incredible toys, but we also got these inventive ways of selling them to us.
Mm.
Yep. Well, and often the cartoons would be a ongoing commercial for the new upcoming toy. Here's you know, Many Faces. This is the first time we're seeing Many Faces. This
Guess
is the backstory.
What? He's in stores right now.
Yeah.
One of the things I found incredible because I was looking into the G.I. Joe side of things, they had with their, when they would sell their cartoon to get syndicated on channels, they go, all right, you can have it for this much, or you can have it for this reduced rate and play 2 G.I. Joe toy ads in that 21 slot. Minutes.
Right.
So it was almost like you'd watch G.I. Joe, then there'd be an ad telling you G.I. Joe. And the other thing that was amazing with G.I. Joe was they made a rule with the animation studio. If you were going to mention one of the characters or one of the vehicles, had to be by the full name so kids knew exactly what to ask for. They knew they wanted Snake Eyes. They knew they wanted, you know what I mean? Like, so every conversation you watch.
Hey, Cobra Commander, battle damage.
You watch it back now knowing that. Because the other rule was that no one could actually hit someone with the gun.
Yeah.
And that was hilariously parodied in an episode of Community where he actually kills someone with a G.I. Joe gun. Yes. But I just thought that was amazing that,
it's
like,
insane.
And obviously they repealed it in like the middle of the 90s. So it's why I'm fat. I'm blaming cartoons is why I'm fat. Because, yeah, I think we really lived through a golden age that we'll never see again. And like last week's episode, how many of those toys that we're getting excited about are from these 80s cartoons that we love?
Yeah. And it also made a huge difference of toys that didn't have cartoons and their lifespan, you know, I think on the market as well.
Rubik's Cube, the animated series.
Well, mate, we got a Battleship movie, so nothing's out of the realm.
It wasn't necessarily just toy lines that the cartoons were driving us towards as well. The introduction of video games.
Yeah.
A lot of cartoons came out, sort of, you know, Mario and...
That Mario, that Sonic. Show. Yeah. That was all... I always found that really weird.
The live action Mario.
You want to talk Nintendo and shows, and in particular cartoons. Have you ever seen the Zelda cartoon? Has anyone actually ever watched that?
No. You ever seen Captain N? That's just an advertisement for Nintendo?
Oh, it's like... The whole thing is like 13 episodes, and it's done in this... awful animation, and the characters, it's like the whole Zelda and Link, and it's that whole thing where the chick doesn't like the guy, and oh, you're disgusting, and blah blah, and he's like, his catchphrase is literally, well, excuse me, princess. And I'm like, oh, wow. It's so awful. It's amazing. You need to watch all 13 episodes. Okay. It's probably why we have not got a decent, like, you know, Netflix or someone giving us Legend of Zelda, because they've looked at that and just gone, nah, too soon. Right.
But the other thing you got to appreciate, like growing up in Australia, statistically, it's incredible how much many cartoons we consumed, given that we're running off two or three channels.
Oh, yes.
And that was the other thing that happened in the 80s. There was a movement from the traditional Saturday morning cartoons to after-school cartoon programming.
Yep. Mm.
That was one of the big things that changed from the 70s to the 80s. So all of a sudden, cartoon creators... they weren't thinking about, I've got to do 50 episodes because that'll be a year. They're like, oh, we need 5 episodes a week, like churned out to sell toys and stuff. And, you know, G1 being a great example of that. Mm. But yeah, it's just awesome. I want to go home and watch cartoons.
Yeah,
and I will.
Absolutely.
It's my life.
So I did put it out to the Patreons. Do they have a favorite cartoon themselves? I'm just going to run through the list real quickly here. We had the obvious ones such as Transformers, G.I. Joe, the real Ghostbusters based on the movie franchise.
Heavy Metal.
Master of the Universe, of course. Thundercats, Cops, Silverhawks, Centurions, Voltron, Dino Riders, Care Bears. I like that shout out. Robotech. Inspector Gadget, one of Davey's favorites. Smurfs, Mask, Gem and the Holograms.
Yes, Gem.
Yeah. Yep. Robotics.
I don't know that one.
No, I didn't know what that was either.
With an X?
With an X. And Super Friends, Challenge of the Super Friends. Honestly, it did start in the 70s, but more episodes were sort of released in the 80s. So I allowed it to fall into the.
There was a lot of cartoons like that that got kind of a resurgence in the 80s. So like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yes.
There was a lot of things that were existing properties. You got Tom and Jerry Kids, a lot of like, because of Muppet Babies, everyone jumped on the bandwagon. They're like, we need a junior version. There was Flintstone Kids. There was a lot of 80s cartoons that were spin-offs of existing properties. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to shout out another one, but I've just looked it up and it falls into that Turtles category of very
Samurai
early.
Pizza Cats, 1990.
Pizza Cats.
I already looked it up.
Samurai Pizza Cats. That's one I would like get up early for and, you know, delay the whole going to school process just so I could watch.
I think that is worth a revisit because it is ingenious, much like a Power Rangers way of redubbing.
Exactly. Yep.
I was watching an episode recently and it's quite incredible because there is a bit where one of the characters is freaking out and the other two, Polyester, explains that it's not a problem. We can sort it out. Then she starts freaking out again. He goes, what's wrong now? And she goes, this episode's 21 minutes. And if I didn't freak out again, we'd have to fill a whole 20 seconds. I'm like, that's incredible.
Yeah,
that's
brilliant.
It was so meta. I couldn't believe it. But it always used to bother me that the theme track had the little line of, got Did more shell than any turtle ever had. How dare you?
How rude. Yep.
All right, lads, here's a couple of questions for us to chew over. Of all the cartoons that we've had a quick chat about, what do we feel had the best intro? And maybe not just the animation side of things, but maybe that theme song that went with as well?
Go on, say it. Well, say it.
I can't go past Thundercats. I
Ooh, think, oh, it's not yes. what I thought you were
I think
say.
It is the, to my mind, absolute banger of a song and some of the most beautiful animation you'll ever see. If I'm ever feeling down, I just go onto YouTube and watch the intro and it just cheers me up in like in a heartbeat. I love that. Look, there's some good ones in there as well. I love, honorable mention, I love the Cops intro.
Yes.
I think Cops is fantastic. And it's like, again, you know, naming all the characters, like a roll call, both the opening
literally
and the...
It is.
It's a roll call for all the toys you have to buy. I think that's fantastic. And look, just the He-Man intro is a masterpiece as well.
Oh, yeah, the filmation that comes across
And even to the company logo. That's so iconic when they did Chappie.
Yeah,
that Blomkamp got that, and he paid a lot of money to get the bling, and then the intro to He-Man in there. So,
and the ending of Transformers where we go dick, and as a kid, I'm like, ha-ha, best thing ever.
We're all there.
This
right?
is made by dick. For all the same criteria, I've chosen a claymation show because that is animation. Trapdoor has the greatest opening of any show of all time, in my opinion. Not theme song, but just the theme song's incredible.
Yeah.
Performed by a band called Zygotes. I looked it up. I was obsessed with that show. And yeah, that gets my pick. Ben.
Mm. Yeah, cool. I'm a big fan of the Voltron, the trumpety intro, and then is it Peter Cullen that, you know, from Days of Long Ago?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, he just sort of
Either him or Frank Welker, because it's the 80s, and apparently there was two jobs going and they turned up.
That's right.
And it gives you a bit of a subplot, of the intro
context,
of Voltron. Every time. But, man, I can't go past Transformers. Like, I love Transformers so much, and that intro just gets me going. Like, it's just so energy, and they changed it up, the animation and things each season and stuff, which is really cool. It keeps it interesting and, kind of cool.
I thought the one Trent was going to shout out was going to be the same as me in Mask.
Oh, it's
like
oh,
in terms
good.
Of 80s, it's just good. That, it's got that, you know, all the whooshing effects and it's just got that real 80s sort of synth beat to it. I think the animation is pretty impressive in that as well. Honorable mention to Count Duckula.
Yes.
If you remember the intro to that, like, I just think that's hilarious.
There's an iconic crossover episode with Danger Mouse because it was both from Thames Animation or whatever
Thames
Studio.
Very British.
So good. So good.
I didn't know that. Now I need to go home and watch cartoons.
Yes, you do.
For me, it's going to be Robotech. Just that more adult style of animation. It told you a story, but the music was not sung. It was more of an orchestral arrangement. Yep. And it was just, it put itself apart from the other cartoons that were available by being more mature in its approach. And
so it was like Fritz the Cat.
Spot on, Fritz the Cat.
Nice.
Coming to an episode of DVG, I'm sure.
Of course.
That is one thing that struck me about Robotech was, I mean, and we might get into this sort of standalone episode versus an actual ongoing story, but Robotech struck me as a child as being like, this is so much for bigger kids. Like, it's just, it's got mature themes, characters would... die and it was sort of just had that more epic feel to it, which I can still picture that reaction to watching the episodes and then obviously missing a whole heap and going, what's happened to the story?
Missing out on a thing of Min Mei singing would just be devastating. Like,
There's definitely some episodes that should never have been made, but you've got to feel
say
closure.
That about most cartoons in the 80s.
I love Robotech, but all those damn Min Mei episodes just killed me. Anyway, moving on.
All right, next question in line. What had the best animation style?
I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thundercats for me.
Yep.
It was, because obviously I was looking at it from adult eyes, but because I loved every cartoon. Like, and I've said before on DVG, like, it wasn't till like King of the Hill come along. I'm like, animated stuff can be not funny. What a waste. Like, I just loved everything because it was animated. And with Thundercats, the thing that stood out to me was there was a lot less of phoning it in that you got from Transformers. And I only mean that in the sense of how many times you're going to see the Decepticons logo flip to Autobots to fill 3 seconds. It's like, yeah, we get it. And even the Turtles. Yeah. How many times are we going to show that outlet that goes out into the harbor from the sewer?
Reused good footage.
Yeah. So Thundercats for me, for sure.
Yeah, I cut, copy, paste, Thundercats, looking at from adult eyes, reading up on all the books, Serial Geek from James Etok. Like, he just, you know, praised that, and the more I read up on it, the more it was compared to other cartoons and things. You know, Thundercats just had it, you know, next level beyond.
And in my mind, like, I can close my eyes and just the idea of the billowing bandages flying off Mama and the transformation. Yeah. Like, that amazing. Was just, a kid had never seen that. Because, you know, back in the days, pre-CGI, you couldn't realize these kind of fantastical things on the level that you had to go to animation for back then.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Look, it might sound generic, but I'm going to go with He-Man because I think that style, like, just that, the even just simple shots of He-Man running left to right, like, the way that there's a particular... And I think it's to do with the painted backgrounds versus a lot of other shows that had those sort of backgrounds that were in the same level of focus and detail. There's just something about that filmation style, which you sort of see a little bit in like Brave Stars, about the only other that was filmation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just that intro sequence with the, you know, the sparks that basically fill the whole screen. Every time they've rebooted He-Man, they've tried to redo it, and it's still not as good as the one done in the 80s.
Masters had its own iconic look in the sense of they incorporated that box art color palette of the skies were red or purple, or, you know, it wasn't a solid color. It had shading, shades, lots of blacks, and it was awesome.
Yeah, and just that, and again, you talk recycled footage, Masters was just as guilty of that.
They wrote the book on it, essentially, didn't they?
Exactly, but it's that, you know, that again, go back to that opening, which, you know, they sort of runs into screen, says something, and then punches the camera, and that just looks so fluid. Mm. It looks like, you know, if it wasn't set in the 80s, you go, well, that's motion capture, right?
Well,
and then they've just animated.
I think,
like,
it's a technique called rotoscoping.
Yeah.
So you trace footage.
Trace footage of real people. And what is fantastic, speaking of rotoscoping, Lord of the Rings, I think they did some...
The original flash?
The original anime. And there's even a scene in that where I think it's Aragorn
trips
running
over.
He trips. The actor actually trips while he's filming the rotoscope. Yeah. And the animators actually just animated him tripping over. It's fantastic.
That's so good.
That's how they did Mortal Kombat, wasn't it? For the animated video game.
Yeah, they literally had people dressed up in the costumes.
Any film from the 80s you watch that has lightning effects in it, that's also the exact same thing of rotoscoping over the frame of the thing.
Yeah, from your mate VHS. Yeah. He was talking about that on your episode. Yeah.
I believe.
Mm. See, I listen.
Look, for me, the answer is Robotech again. Draw-dropping animation, but you guys
draw
are right.
Draw-dropping or jaw-dropping?
Well,
they're two different levels.
That's why he shut the door behind.
All now know what Frank does when he wakes up early.
This is a pantheon
family-friendly
podcast.
Show.
Look, 100% shout-out to the Thundercats. I hadn't even thought about the animation of Mumra when he does the transformation and the ribbons flowing. And as soon as you said that, it came into my head. Yeah, you're 100% right. That is absolutely perfect animation.
Yeah, for me, it was a toss-up between Robotech and Thundercats. But episode one, when you get naked Jatara, I think it just takes it over the line. I don't think you can go past that. Giggity. That's so weird looking back at that.
Yeah.
They're all naked in the first episode. I mean, they're cats, and they don't animate the nipples, but still, like, it's an odd choice.
Yep.
I think the guys who did the recent movie of cats just went, oh yeah, Thundercats, eh?
And for this shout
out though to Muppet Babies, every time that Jim Henson would call in a favor and just use real footage of like Star Wars or something, and just put the Muppet Babies in front of the screen, it was perfection.
Yeah.
Is there a favorite character anyone had from a program?
One character or like a cast of characters?
I'll take an answer on either, to be honest.
I mean, I grew up loving Skeletor and all those, you know, the villains. I've been a villains kid for since I was a, you know, yeah, that's probably mine. I loved all the Robotech, the mechs and things like that. That were just next level. The Zentraudi and like,
yes.
Yeah, I used to look up, what's his name? The Skull Squadron leader.
Roy Falker. Roy,
he was just the coolest.
Wasn't
know,
he just?
Yeah.
Yep.
I wanted to be him when I was
that,
a kid.
The emo hairstyle.
Yeah, I just, but that was so, you know, just of its time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Cops on this one just because they were like it had that real technology futuristic stuff that sort of drew me in as a kid. But then it's the old like, yeah, wise guys, eh? Like old gangster voice type vibe to it and stuff. And you felt like you were seeing different characters each episode because they were like, this character is going to be, you know, in it for the whole thing. And then he's just gone for the next five. And then when he pops back up again, you're like, oh, it's the guy with guns in his chest. Like, I don't remember the names clearly.
Buttons McBoom Boom.
Yeah.
For me, it's Atlas from Astro Boy. He was a character introduced early on as a villain, the brother figure to Astro. And he as a recurring character, he's the only person who had an ongoing storyline throughout the whole series and had a redemption arc in his final episode. So he's really the only person who had a growth as a character, and you got to see a payoff at the end of the series.
Was he the gold character?
That's right.
Yeah,
yes.
Yep. I know him. Davey.
For me, it's actually my all-time favorite superhero cartoon of the 1980s. Because, you know, obviously in the 90s we got Batman animated, X-Men animated. But there was another animated superhero that had incredible suit, awesome colors, was as muscly as He-Man, and also...
Banana Man?
He-Man. He-Man had Adam. Banana Man had Eric.
Apple Man was
Apple Man, and there's nothing, and Dr. Gloom. There was nothing cooler than, and I've always talked about this, in the animation of Inspector Gadget, when his car transforms, at about the halfway mark of that transforming, is the coolest car that's ever existed because it's like this weird long Trans Am, but then it transforms back into what it's transforming into. Much like that, in the intro of Banana Man, there's a point where his legs first grow out and he's super muscly, but then the legs kind of retracted, shrink back up. And I'm like, no, give me the long leg Banana Man.
So he gets his power from eating a banana, correct?
He does, yes.
What happens if he mistakenly orders and gets banana bread?
Ooh.
Does he half transform? Is it the upper half?
For a 5-minute show, there's not enough
backstory. Yeah, who's that character from Ren and Stimpy that looks like a toast?
That's Powder Toast Man. Yeah. I'm like kids, mum's away. Let's watch Ren and Stimpy, right?
Oh, no.
I watched the first episode like, let's never watch Ren and Stimpy again. You talk about member berries or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, for years, I'm like, one day we're going to watch Ren and Stimpy. I love Ren and Stimpy so much. And that time came recently, and now I'm like, let's just remember what it used to be like and not what it actually is.
There are some places where your memories is the best place for them.
I just have this memory of an episode where they were playing a board game called, and it had a jingle, Don't Piss on the Electric Fence. And Stimpy's there like moving his little one, two. And Ren just gets so fed up at the end because I think Stimpy wins. He goes, well, eat this. And he unzips his skin to reveal in my mind just like a section of red underskin.
A red rocket or something.
And he just pisses on the fence and they explode and basically die. It's just like, what am I watching?
Yeah. Like, let's just say SpongeBob SquarePants is a better watch than...
it's a similar kind of...
It is, but like, I think it's a thing of its time. You know, right, when I was... Yeah. 10-year-old Ben thought this was the best, most amazing, risque cartoon ever made, right? And I probably haven't seen it for 20, 30 years. Rewatching it, I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? It was painful.
Right.
The jokes weren't even funny. They were like, it's like, yep. It was a shock to the system. Anyway, moving on.
Where did Inspector Gadget come timeline? That was
mid-80s.
Yeah, look, as a character, I think the fact it was Don Adams Maxwell Smart fame, who I loved Maxwell Smart.
Frank Welker as Dr. Claw.
Yeah.
Oh, and just the elusiveness of never seeing his face. Like, yeah.
It's a cool gimmick for a cartoon.
Would have killed to see his face, and then we saw it as a toy. I'm like, that's exactly what I didn't
think. I built it up like some kind of evil, like, mech cat because of his arm and stuff. Yes. Because he's got the cat. And then you just see that it's like, oh, okay.
And so an evil scientist. Like, Yeah.
I don't think that was endorsed by the animators, that action figure, to be quite honest.
No, they wouldn't even consult it. No. It was just, but kudos to them for not ever showing his face. Yeah. So,
I think it's a fantastic character. Oh, the bumbling kind of idiot.
He was revolutionary as a cartoon when he came into Australia, going directly to the ABC at the time. And I remember they made a real big song and dance about this amazing cartoon. It's a revolutionary cartoon. Talked about Don Adams being the voice of him as well. That this was going to be the biggest thing to hit television in Australia for years. And they were kind of right. It definitely was. The song, the animation, the whole thing was wonderful.
It seemed to get a pretty big run from memory. Like it was a big part of sort of growing up.
Well, I think it got two runs. It got the original 80s run, and then it got another run when they made the toys.
The toys.
Well, I remember they had an amazing like run of Hungry Jack's toys that were Inspector Gadget. And that was off the same, like it wasn't a reboot or anything. That was just the same run
animation.
Animation.
Yeah.
So. Anyone know how long it went for, season-wise?
I've got it. I've at least three seasons.
I reckon 83 to like early 90s.
Five seasons.
Wow.
In my mind, I was a bit like...
How many episodes?
Good question. Don't know. I assume 52, like that's a lot.
Mm.
Anyway, moving on. Come back with that answer. Cartoons were delivered in one of two styles. They could either be a standalone episode going forward as a whole run, or it could be a storyline, like an operatic story being told.
I think 98% of them were single villain, villain of the day, villain of the week, whatever storyline. And then the other one, the ongoing storyline, was very non-existent.
To Be Continued really, was a curse to a kid.
Well, To Be Continued was this is a three-episode story arc. Done. You know, this is sometimes we're going to do this, you know, 3-4 episode one, and it can be a movie length premiere, and this is the intro
But to Scott's point, like, I have memories of, you know, one week you'd go, like, you'd watch part one of something, and it's like, To Be Continued. The following week you had school sport or something on the Saturday morning. Back in the 90s, it was one and done. And the 80s as well.
Never see it
there
again.
There was never see it again.
Yeah. No. I think, for when we grew up, the episode of the week was the way to consume it, because
that also came down to syndication, because that didn't limit programming.
Yep.
And one thing I remember, like a GTS BKN, the local conglomerate that we had, they didn't give a crap. So they would play an episode of something and be like, To Be Continued next week, and the next week would roll around, and it's a completely different episode. There was no thought whatsoever put into the program.
Hey, I cancelled sport to be here, and
but yeah,
I couldn't go to Minky because I had a sore throat for this.
So yeah, for me, as a kid consuming this, the way it was provided to us, I probably preferred the just standalone episodes that I could come and give and take. I think obviously now the better outcome would be to have at least some overarching story, because that's more satisfying, I think. And certainly the world we live in today, with the way you can stream and consume and just take what you want at whatever time, you almost now would be put off by something that is very just episodic.
I remember when Declan was very young, downloading every episode that was at the time of Batman Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
And he just watched it constantly through, cycling through. And it was so funny. One day we watched something on free-to-air TV and it finished. I'm like, all right, mate, let's go do something. He's like, oh, no, the next episode's about to start.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. I'm sorry that I misled you. That is not how cartoons work, buddy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a story of the era I grew up in.
It's so funny.
The times before pause.
We really are like a coddled generation, as much as we pretend not to be. Like, compare our in my days to your parents in my days. Like, my mum's like, in our day, we got the cane if you, like, did something wrong or spilt your ink pot at school. And I'm like, in my day, you had to watch Captain Planet and then wait to the next one the next day.
It's fair to say that as a kid, standalone episodes were far better. It didn't matter what order you watched them in, it was still a brilliant 22 minutes of escapism.
100%.
Mm. As an adult, definitely watching something episodic is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I think that some of the, and it probably not talking 80s, but some of the later cartoons, probably around that sort of early 2000s, got onto this really nice of, it's episodic, but there's a little
very
like
subtle
subplot that runs, and then it comes good in like the midpoint of the season and then plays out. 2003 Turtles is the one that jumps to mind, where you just this, what's going on with the Shredder? Why is he a bit weird? And then there's this massive payoff nearly two seasons later where you're like, holy crap, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it doesn't get in the way. Like you can
individual
you watch them out of order, but it's there as a payoff, right?
You look at the like the 1990s when it comes to things like Street Sharks. Every episode was a bottle episode like The Simpsons, where by the end of that episode,
it all resets.
Back to reset.
The roads fix themselves.
Oh, it still bothers me.
But so speaking of that, what cartoons did have a ongoing storyline? So
Robotech, definitely.
Yeah, Robotech, 100%. That was probably, you know, the biggest, most solid going one. Voltron, very loosely in the background, very subtle. You can easily jump on board any episode, catch up, but watching them, you know, on DVD, you pick up on a, you know, thing. But that was extremely cut by the Japanese as well, because they cut all the death and violence and the blood and stuff like that, because it was...
Love an example of that programming.
Americans.
The programming thing I was talking about. I used to love the animated version. It was on after Astro Boy in the morning on ABC. It was the Wonderful Wizard of Oz cartoon.
Yep.
And there was no thought given to the programming. So you'd watch one day and they'd meet the lion for the first time. It's like, oh, good. The second episode was part two of a battle with the Wicked Witch of the West. Episode three, they'd meet Tin Man. It's like, what is going on with this?
How am I supposed to follow this story?
One episode, Emerald City, is just a little silhouette in the back. The next one, they're up on top of the Tower of Emerald City. You're like, God, give some continuity, please.
Thundercats gets a bit of praise for having a beginning, a middle, and an end. Not quite, you know, tied together with a bow tie, but it does, you know, it did finish on a bit of a this is it type thing. That's all I've got. Anything else?
Yeah, Transformers was constantly.
Oh, but yeah, well, I mean, I think
there's Transformers pre the movie, and then when the movie
in
came
the
out,
year 2005.
Yeah, that's it. They had to pivot and you know, get all the new toys on screen, basically.
The Autobots have, you know, revised to wherever, Cybertron. And I love that intro. That was one of the coolest.
There was a show I very vaguely recall, something along the lines of The Lost City of Gold.
Mysterious City of Gold.
That felt to me like it continued as a story.
That was a hardcore ABC show.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember watching that.
A couple other shout outs for that category, Ben. There was Ulysses 31.
Right. Yes. Never seen that. I mean, I know people, there's fans of it and things, but I don't know much about it.
What else did I have picked out? Star Blazers.
Cool.
That was definitely episodic going through. Mysterious Heaters of Gold. Dungeons and Dragons. It was kind of on that idea of being episodic as well, where there was a goal that everyone was trying to achieve. Look, honestly, that's probably about it. Yeah. Everything else on the list is very standalone episodes.
There's one that was on my list that I'm sure it's potentially obscure enough to no one to know what I'm talking about. David the Gnome was a cartoon I absolutely loved as a kid. And that progressed in the sense that, like, him and his wife would build, like, a new house to live in.
Is his wife
a
Anita?
Maybe. They'd build a house in the forest and then like a fox would eat their house. And so the next episode was them finding somewhere else to live and getting out of the valley that was flooding. It was a great show. It was a good time.
You're right.
Stop all looking at me blankly. You all watch flip books because you're old.
All right. One last question. Of course, the people put in charge of bringing these wonderful cartoons and characters to life are the voice actors. And quickly around the room, guys, who's your standout voice actor and maybe who's their best portrayal?
No one's allowed to say Welker or Cullen.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Toy Power.
Yeah. And that's it.
Well, just one thing I know. I mean, when this is not done well, it's really noticeable. Like when they've hired, you know, really bad voice actors, it can be very, very jarring. Not that I can think of a lot off the top of my head, but I have certainly watched animation where I'm like, man, this person doesn't give a shit. Like they're just dry and it's terrible. Mm. I mean, and again, this might be a bit late, but I thought, you know, like the Rob Paulsons and the Cam Clarks, I think, you know, like those sort of guys, a lot of that, you know, just the performances they can deliver are great.
Pinky and the Brain.
He's like with Paulson, he's always himself.
Yep.
But it's never the same performance twice. But then you could say that, like, because obviously the two being Frank Welker and Peter Cullen, like you look at Welker doing the voice of Kermit in Muppet Babies and then like, you know, Transformers Megatron. And stuff like
that.
There was so many. And he, Dr. Claw as well with Frank Welker doing that kind of stuff. It was a varied performance. And if you watch any interviews with those guys, it's actually funny how much they thought about it. We're like, Peter was like, I went for a walk. Peter Gunn's like, I went for a walk along the ocean. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this
Optimus
one.
Optimus Prime is based off my brother.
Well, because look, both of those guys worked on GoBots, which haven't had a mention yet, which was from the 80s as well. Both those guys worked on GoBots before Transformers. Mm. Yeah. So imagine going, oh, so what's it about? And it's like, oh, you've sent me the wrong thing. You've just sent me Transformers again. Yeah, I finished this. You already paid me for it.
I mean, he's been shouted out already, but Don Adams, of course, is pretty iconic in that role. It's a Brendan on the Hammerbarn show I'm a part of. He does a really mean Don Adams Inspector Gadget to the point where his little niece is like, "Do the voice, do the," and he's like, "Oh no!" And he started out as, "Yeah, this is my thing," and now he's like, "Oh, it's my thing."
Wonder how much of it they just took Maxwell Smart bits and just like edited it to do.
Yeah, I wonder if that was the reel they sent him. Going, hey, you can be in this show. We've just resampled your voice. And I don't know the actor's name, but Cops, the Bulletproof.
Yeah,
that sort of, you know, he had this big, deep, booming voice and just these, you know, the iconic line, you know, case closed at the end of every episode and stuff. I was like,
it's crime fighting.
That's
time.
The one. Yeah, yeah. That sort of stuff really stands out to me.
Mm.
Look, Frank Welker is definitely the one to go to because of, you know, Megatron. But a little left of field, Casey Kasem. You'll recognize the voice.
He did Shaggy
from the Scooby-Doo series, man. And he's got a very distinctive voice. But for me, he stands out as Robin from Challenge of the Super Friends.
Okay.
Yes. Google it or YouTube it. Have a listen. You'll recognize the voice straight away.
Cool. Well, how do you rate Matthew Lillard's interpretation of Shaggy then in comparison to that original?
Never watched the live-action Scooby-Doos, no.
He took over as Shaggy as well in all the animated features after that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
From what I've heard, he did an amazing job.
Yeah.
Like, he did it up until like 4 years ago where they got Will Forte from MacGruber to play it in the Scoob.
I saw a photo the other day of that cast, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze, and it's just like when the casting director had an absolute banger of a day, like just a shot of those four because it's just brilliantly
casted. Or when the casting director walked She's All That the day before.
Yeah, exactly.
Larry Kenny as Lion-O, I think he did a, that kind of
larger than life.
Yeah, larger than life, booming sort of, but very leadership qualities.
Yeah.
A bit like the Peter Cullen, a bit like probably voice of He-Man.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
The only other cartoon on my list that hasn't got a mention that deserves one. Bangers and Mash.
Oh, yes. Partners in Crime.
Some of those British ones are just hilarious to watch.
There's another one that
because it's
British...
the goodies doing the voices for that. And Banana Man, I believe.
Yes.
I could be wrong, but I think it is.
Tim Brooke Taylor, Bill Oddie.
Yeah.
I think prior to the 80s, the only other era of cartoon greatness. We're going to do 90s soon. But is the, of course, the Looney Tune era. Like the,
Mel Blanc.
Roadrunner and, you know, Bugs Bunny and, you know, all those characters. Like that is just hardcore guns, smoking, explosions, lack of safety, you know. And yet we all grew up on that stuff. We're all fine. And yet, you know, now you watch the new versions of Looney Tunes and it's so lame and, you know,
where's the TNT? Where's the shotgun to someone's face that makes Daffy's bill go around the back of his head?
Like, but then season, duck
we
season.
Got, we got weirdly sexual Lola Bunny. So there's both ends of that scale.
Yeah, thanks, Space Jam, for that.
Or the one where he's at the opera, where he dresses up as the opera girl, and you know, the barbershop where he's doing Elmer Fudd's head.
I love the pop culture milestone that is that Wayne and Garth having the conversation of, did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when she dressed up as a girl? And just that moment of silence where the entire zeitgeist of the world watching that film went,
That was an outtake, wasn't it?
Like, that was just
his reaction to it. He goes, no.
That's why he laughs so much. Yeah. No.
Gold.
Yeah.
Wow, wonderful stuff, guys. Well done. Thank you very much for that. Maybe time to move on to one more category at the end of the episode. I believe our good man Colin Betts has sent us a parcel. And what we might do is entertain everyone while Trent gets ready to...
Well, in typical Colin style, this comes with a lovely note, which I'll give Trent a moment to scan over and maybe give us the highlights, because we don't have time to read out a full A4 page of his kind words.
I received this in the post yesterday. It was a Friday. And hadn't had a chance to open it, so I thought it would be a good opportunity to open it here. And what I've done is opened up the box first of all, and inside the box is another box, right? Now, when you get into basically three boxes contained within that box, A, B, and C, and they're labeled like with beautiful...
If you would like, I will read the note while you cut open that box,
okay,
if that helps.
But what I want to point out is box A and box B were next to each other, so you can take them out. Then box C is essentially the Sky Striker, and it's G.I. lower Joe. Down. G.I. Joe Sky Striker. It's lower down in the box. So Colin's inserted these two handles, so you can just lift it out like without damaging. It's just ingenious, right? Like just the level of thought that's gone into this. And I know, Colin, a big thank you, because I know the effort you went to get this back to the post office to try and get it within the size requirement.
So it's still a huge box.
It's a massive box.
Okay, here we go.
And the postage was $700,000 Australian. You know. So it says, "Hey, Trent. Well, after all that, it's finally here. The truth that you are, in fact, a convert to the ways of G.I. Joe and Cobra. This package is structured into three parts. Box A are the carded G.I. Joe figures."
Which
I believe is that what we're looking at?
No, this is box B.
Good job. If only he'd somehow put letters or numbers or
something.
Which
one to open first?
Well, I thought box B would be more interesting for everyone.
So box B contains Frank's Transformers, Ben's Pincher.
Yes. Yep.
As well as some gifts for you.
Some gifts. Here we go.
Ben, Frank, and Scott. As well as Callum and Robbie, but I think I'll get Callum and Robbie's because I'm here too.
Pass that one down. That's for Alice. Scotty.
Oh, jeez.
Scotty, Benno.
Thank you.
Frank, some Transformers.
Oh, yes. MicroMasters in here.
More Benno.
One of three.
Got a Trent. Do you want to open up one of these Trent ones? Callum and... Oh, here you go. There's some Callum and Robbie.
Looking like a suspiciously cup-shaped
Frank, I'm
object
just
here.
This is almost like a bendable of the Phantom.
Oh, wow. It is.
Oh, man.
A bendy. Oh, thank you very much. Look at that.
Oh, nice. Look, it's a Shredder. It's the inner robot of the metal mutations. So this Shredder figure, I forgot about this. This Shredder has all this armor and things like that, you know, and he turns into a tiger. And this is the inner Shredder.
Oh,
de-armorized.
Yes.
This is awesome. Wicked. Oh, man. It's got such big hands.
I've got here a vintage 7-Eleven cup circa 1973.
Jeez.
That has the old school Supergirl. Obviously, they did a run of DC figures on these cups. That is awesome, man. That's going to be so good to put in the Supergirl collection.
Beautiful,
that's
artwork. Amazing. What year is that? 73?
1973. Looking at the back.
Okay.
Is it so like good. Hard? Or
yeah,
is it...
it's just like a plastic cup you would get at 7-Eleven.
Gosh.
And then inside there, he's got a present to Jack as well.
Secret identity.
Well, Jack's opened Linda enough Lee presents for you. So.
This is the pig tax.
I've also got this, which I have always admired but never got. It might be Ertl, but it's basically a PVC Dick Tracy figure of him looking at his radio watch. And look at that. Batman.
Oh, nice.
Again, this is the 70s, probably about 3 inches, little PVC Batman, but the blue and gray.
Yes,
70s kind of version. Yeah,
they're very superpowers looking.
How does it feel to have a new dick in your hand?
Dick was...
What? That is not rude.
Three inches? Yeah.
Two and a half,
with a yellow trench coat on.
Now, will you be posting a 3-inch dick pic for the Discord?
It's mandatory.
Yeah. So, of course, head on over to the Toy Power Discord to see Trent's newest dick pic. Are we ever going to grow up?
Not a chance.
We're doing a podcast about toys. We're not growing up.
A room full of Arrested Development individuals. Dick jokes. Oh, nice.
Got my inner robot for Octopunch. This is awesome. So Morgatron 84 actually heard me talking about how much I needed one. He had a spare, so he hooked me up. So now I've gone from having none to two. And the beautiful thing with Transformers is I can have one in robot mode displayed on the shelf, and this one can be in its crab mode on the shelf with his pencils and things. This is awesome. Thank you so much, Colin. Really, really appreciate it.
He's also thrown in a Ninja Turtles circa 2012 version sticker book for Jack. Now, the colouring he's not so good at, let's be honest.
What?
I pressed the wrong button there. Sorry. This is a thing of having too many buttons.
The enjoyment of none of us knowing who was responsible for that noise for a good 2 seconds.
What was that?
Worrying.
But you've done really well here, Colin, because stickers, Jack is all about stickers. I expect these to be all over my pieces of furniture very shortly.
The fanciest electric car on the block. Scotty, what do you got there?
Colin knows his flavours. I've got a good selection of Fantastic Four bits and pieces here. A Modern Age Previews Black Bolt.
Oh, sweet.
And he's about 6 inches tall, plenty of articulation. But what's really awesome here is that the wings under his arms, attached to his back, are actually made of cloth.
He's a Silverhawk.
He is. So as he opens and closes his arms, that bit of cloth moves back and forth as well. That's really awesome. And I have a Heavy Metals Hero die-cast Silver Surfer.
Nice.
Mint on card.
Has he got his surfboard?
He does not have a surfboard.
Thanks, Ben.
He is boardless. So
he's just silver.
You know what to put in the next parcel, Colin.
Just get a tech deck board, paint it silver.
And Trent's not talking at the moment because he's licking his new Carter G.I. Joe figures.
Well, there's
a few of them. Are these from the Sky Striker?
I think these are from the Sky Striker. So you've got Failsafe, Radar Intercept Officer. So there's a whole heap of those Carter figures. But what Colin has thrown in here is a G.I. Joe Marvel comic with the beautiful board. As a note here, Trent, as noted, this is a reader's copy, but what a copy. Introduction of Quinn, cool standalone for a while, the most valuable Joe comic, a real American hero at its best. That is beautiful. It looks really old.
Yeah, it's Marvel. So it's 82, 83.
Okay. Old school.
Yep.
That's fantastic. And Colin did gift me a Quinn in the last package.
Nice.
The Super 7 Quinn.
Yep.
And I think there's a couple of Joe figures that... Oh, no, look at this. Oh, this is an Action Master I don't have. Look at that.
Inferno.
Inferno. Yeah. Very nice. Nice.
We've got a whole swathe here of
Micromasters.
Micromasters, but also Colin.
Oh, nice.
Got the Autobot clones. Yeah. I've had the Decepticon ones for a while, and I was like, well, you know, gotta complete those sets.
One's heaps shorter than the other. Yeah. One's a race car and one's a plane. Yeah. Yep. Oh, I've never seen them in real life. So
me neither.
I've seen lots of pictures, but you don't get a scale for size. So,
yeah,
cool.
And I've got the Duocons where you put the plane on top of the tank and flip and join together and stuff.
A couple of mini bots.
Yeah, got mini bots to round out the collection. Sweet. So, yes, thank you very much, Colin. This is going to be causing me to rearrange my Transformers shelf from top to bottom. That's what it's all about. Thanks, mate. And Sky Striker.
There is a Sky Striker in there as well. I can't reach it from where I'm sitting, but we had it open before, and the box art on that is sensational.
Yeah, super vintage.
Very, very beautiful and vintage.
And everyone around the table secretly excited for what he has to sell to make space.
Well, the box art is all we're going to be seeing for a while.
I know. Oh, be careful. Unpunched too.
Yeah, these are all unpunched.
So these are all rewards with the Sky Striker, all these?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe these are all.
Damn.
These are all the tiered
rewards. Because I would have thought you'd get. Oh, because this is not. Is this classified scale, the Sky Striker?
No. It's 3.75
right,
inch.
Right, gotcha.
So.
Yeah.
Very, very vintage-esque. Nice. No, those are beautiful. Yeah.
Amazing as always, Colin. Thank you, Colin. Thank you very much.
Yep.
What an effort. I mean, the packing in itself.
Yes.
Is like a day's worth of work, you know. I mean, like, and we can't thank you enough for the, you know, effort.
Yep.
You've gone to, Colin. This is just above and beyond. So,
it's okay that I didn't get anything.
Didn't you though?
I got the experience of watching Trent's OCD as he puts them back the way they were in the box.
It's like a puzzle. I didn't know how to do it almost.
I should share. He also, the present for Jack, I sort of alluded to, was this is a very Kenner style Batman. It's Batman wearing white for some reason.
Arctic Attack.
Is that what it is? Yes. There you go. Yeah,
he's big shoulder mounted ice cannon thingies to fight Mr. Freeze or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a little present for Jack. He does have, he's shown a little bit of an interest in Batman. He knows Batman and Spider-Man at this point. So, it'd be interesting to see which.
I think if you were to hand in. Them that and say this is Goat Man, he'd be all
he's
about
got the
it.
Ears.
Yeah, he's like, yes, please.
Love it.
Brilliant. Well,
another wonderful episode. Davey, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to carry you guys anytime.
Oh.
I hear tell us about DVG. You're back on the air after a bit of a break.
Yeah, back to it. We've new approach of no brow, low brow is right. Our new programming. So the no brow episodes will just be me talking with people and the low brow will be Casey and I being deviants. Got some great guests. One through Toy Power Podcast, animator Ollie Jones.
Oh, wonderful.
Special.
I love Ollie's work. Oh, and his output, what he does... In the time frames he does them is out of this world.
You look at the action figures that he creates, custom, like claymation action figures of stuff. It drives me crazy because he'll just churn out this amazing, you know, broadcast quality thing. Then he just mashes it back into a pile of clay. It hurts my heart to know, but the work that he does is incredible. So he's done an episode. We've got a whole heap of the usual crap. And just check us out if you enjoy low brows or no brows and boobies on an audio format.
And Ollie Jones does just on that. He animates a lot of the psychedelic porn crumpets video clips. So well worth checking out. The animation is out of this world. Like it's just him that does it. It's insane.
He goes into a lot of it on his episode, which I think if everything lines up is released today.
Okay.
Ooh. But yeah, you should seriously check it out because his work is incredible. He's done music videos for like the Prodigy, Seven Dust. Yep. Like just his work is like he does stuff that's like the best music video you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then backs it up with a sequel that's better than the previous. It's insane. He makes his own action figures. He's everything that everyone wishes we were. And so shout out to him. And check that episode out. There's another episode not to check out, which maybe
features Moisty Magic taking her microphone in the toilet. But anyway, all these things and more on DBG. And we're going to do a crossover.
Are we?
Well, maybe.
Here you go, guys. You're getting dobbed in. We're going to do a crossover episode with DVG. It may or may not be safe for the Toy Power airwaves.
It'll be a cinematic classic with Kylie Minogue.
Street Fighter.
Oh, we are doing a Street Fighter episode.
No, it's an episode of Neighbours.
Does that mean the episode art I'll be a Mortal Kombat character?
You better believe it.
Nice.
Fantastic. And have you updated your artwork as well? Just a different colour palette?
I found like 2 seasons ago artwork, changed the color till I was happy with it,
yep,
put it in the new thing and realized that we'd been using that color for about 6 months. So it works for me. I'm like, yeah, that works.
Cool. Okay.
It was different than the last one. So yeah, it's good.
It looked good. Oh, fantastic. Doing good work as always. Thanks for joining us again. Thanks, always guys. A pleasure. Anytime. Highlight of my week.
I always like to make sure the notifications on your Discord drop every now and then. So I come on and all those usual great episodes this week, guys. None of that happened. Shout out to everyone.
That is true. Very good. All right. Thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power. Thank you for your company. We appreciate it. And to all our patrons, thank you for your ongoing support and chatter on the Discord. We hope you all stay safe, look after one another, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.